All right. Judges chapter 7. Nope. Judges chapter 12. I don't know where the 7 came from. Judges chapter 12. We are going to look at three judges tonight. And I made a timeline. You can tell I made it. Looks like it was done with Windows Vista or something like that. Anyways, I made a timeline because I want us to look at three judges together. And not much is said about these judges. But I think if we look at them collectively and we kind of fill in the blanks, I think we can make some conclusions. Not guesses, but some conclusions with evidence as to the condition of Israel and these people during this time. And so this is part 11. If you've kept all your handouts, you're going to find out there's two part 9s. And last week was a part 9. It was changed to part 10. I think there's two part 8s, and maybe I changed 9 to 10 and 10 to 11. So this is part 11, if you're keeping up with that kind of stuff. And we're going to talk about 25 years of prosperity under Ibzan, Elon, and Abdon. Now, the text that we're going to be dealing with begins in verse 8 of chapter 12. And goes through verse 15. So let's read. This is the entirety of these three judges. All that we have recorded in Scripture is found in these verses. It says in verse 8, "And after him, Ibzan of Bethlehem judged Israel. And he had 30 sons and 30 daughters, whom he sent abroad and took in 30 daughters from abroad for his sons. And he judged Israel 7 years. Then died Ibzan and was buried at Bethlehem. And after him, Elon, a Zebulunite, judged Israel, and he judged Israel 10 years. And Elon, the Zebulunite, died and was buried in Ajalon in the country of Zebulun. And after him, Abdon, the son of Heli, the Pirathonite, judged Israel. And he had 40 sons and 30 nephews that rode on 70 ass colts. And he judged Israel 8 years. And Abdon, son of Heli, the Pithronite, died and was buried in Pirathon in the land of Ephraim in the mount of the Amalekites." So, I want to look at these three judges collectively, and I want to compare them to the previous judge that we looked at the last two Wednesday nights. I read nephews. If you'll be patient, I'll deal with that in a little bit. You were fixing to either tell me to burn my Bible or you were going to burn yours, wasn't you? The Hebrew word means son of son. If you read Shakespeare, Macbeth, he uses the word nephew for grandchildren. It was a common translation for grandchildren. I know you're curious as a cat and you wasn't going to make it for another 30 minutes, so we'll get that going. All right. I have listed there on that timeline that I'm so proud of. I have listed on that timeline under Jephthah because he reigned for 6 years. And I listed just some characteristics that we know about Jephthah. And then if you look at Ibzan and Elon and Abdon, there's a lot more question marks than there are answers. Jephthah ruled over Israel less than all of these men, yet there is less said about these men combined than there is about Jephthah. So I put him there for comparison, and I want us to talk about Jephthah's early status. If you will remember back in chapter 11, verses 1 through 3, you don't have to turn back there, let's just recap. His mother was a prostitute. When his father died, his brothers, his half-brothers of his father, all thrust him out. They ran him off. And he went and dwelt in the land of Tob. And he lived outside of the realm of Israel. And while he lived out there, he learned how to fight. He learned how to battle. He became a powerful military leader. And then all of a sudden, Gilead gets invaded by the children of Ammon, And they need somebody that knows how to fight, and lo and behold, the only guy they know is their half-brother that they kicked out, so they went and brought him back. He had a early status that was beyond his control that made him despised by others. Okay? Also, I want you to notice before Jephthah, there were 18 years that Israel was handed over into the hand of Ammon and the Philistines. So there were 18 years of invasion and captivity and being hauled off into slavery and having all your crops stolen or burned, all your livestock stolen or burned, all your kids captured, kidnapped, hauled off. All this was taking place broadly across Israel. If you go on and read chapter 10, you're going to find that it wasn't just Ephraim and Gilead and Manasseh and all these tribes on the other side of the Jordan. They were actually going into Judah and Benjamin and Zebulun, and they were raiding Israel from one end to the other for 18 years. Then Jephthah comes along and brings 7 years of prosperity. Not instant prosperity. As soon as he wins his victory, Ephraim attacks him. He has to whip them. But he judges Israel, and there's no invasions that are recorded for 6 years. So we see his early status. We see how he grew up. We see the status of Israel. Now, what is the early status of Isban there in verses 8 through 10? Let's read it again. And after him, Isban of Bethlehem judged Israel, and he had 30 sons and 30 daughters whom he sent abroad, and took in 30 daughters from abroad and for his sons. And he judged Israel 7 years. Then died Isban and was buried in Bethlehem. How long did he judge Israel? How many 7-year-olds you ever seen get married? This is the Baptist congregational answer. How many 7-year-olds have you seen get married? None. Something tells me that the 60 children he had were all prior to his 7 years as judge. So what do we know about his early years? He had one wife. For 60 years, they had a child every November. The women are all saying no. The men are scratching their head trying to do math. What was Isban's life prior to being judge? How was it? Let me ask you a question. How much does it cost, Busy? How much does it cost to feed 60 children? Now, it's Christmas time. Let's just say he had 10 wives that averaged 6 children each. Or we could go with 6 wives that averaged 10 children each. Whatever you want to do. How expensive, men, would 10 wives be? How much money does Isban have to continue to produce children until he reaches 30 boys and 30 girls? Is he a wealthy man prior to becoming judge? Yay or nay? Well, you guys have just made some deductions about Isban that's not in the scripture, but it's clearly in the scripture. Not in print, but in between the lines we can read and see here that Isban was a wealthy man. He was a wealthy man. Let's look at Elon. Elon, verses 11 and 12. And after him, Elon, the Zebulunite, judged Israel, and judged Israel 10 years. And Elon, the Zebulunite, died and was buried in Ajalon in the country of Zebulun. What do we know about him? Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. There's no possible way of knowing. We know Ibzan. We know that he had multiple wives. We know that he had a ton of children. Therefore, you don't go out and buy your food back then. You grew most of it. Israel is an agricultural country, an agricultural culture. So more than likely, Ibzan had land in order to provide the milk and the bread and the corn and all the other things you need to feed 60 kids and 6 to 10 wives. Okay? We know nothing about Elon. There's nothing here to read into it. However, when you read these commentaries, I'm telling you, the book of Judges has no good commentaries. If somebody said, what should I study if I was going to do a study of the book of Judges? I would say, and it's not bragging, I'm just being honest, my sermons. Because I have combed through 30 or 40 different commentaries. and all of them arrive at weird conclusions with no substance. None. The best commentators that I normally turn to, here, they just go off the rails. And I don't know why. But I think everybody is just regurgitating what someone before them said. Okay? People make all kinds of speculations about Elon. There's nothing there for Elon. We can deduct nothing from him. What about Abdon? Let's read verses 13 through 15. And after him, Abdon, the son of Helal, the Pirathonite, judged Israel. And he had 40 sons and 30 nephews that rode on 70 ass colts. And he judged Israel 8 years. And Abdon, the son of Helal, the Pirathonite, died and was buried in Pirathon in the land of Ephraim in the mount of the Amalekites. What can we say about his early status? He had 40 sons. Wealthy? How old do you think Abdon was when he became judge? He judged Israel 8 years. How many people do you know who have 30 grandsons? Y'all want to do the average math? You have your first child at 20. You have your first grandchild at 40. Your grandchild is old enough to ride his own donkey and go all over the country as your emissary. So he's got to be 20. You back all this math up. Like Rendell said, he's got to be at least 60 years old by the time he becomes a judge in Israel. So what can we deduct about him? He's also a wealthy man. We can't say yay or nay about Elon, but we can say absolutely certain Ibsen and Abdon are wealthy, wealthy men. I would say among the wealthiest in Israel. Brother Helt, why would you say they're among the wealthiest of Israel? You guys just told me you thought Abdon was 60 years old. And I agreed with you. Back it up. Before he reigned, he would have been 50 years old when Elon became king, right? All them kids would have been born. Back it up 7 more years, he'd have been 43 when Ibsen became king. Same age as me. I've got kids in college. Back it up 6 more years, he would have had most of these children during the time of Jephthah. So he would have had nearly 40 children during the 18-year raiding by the Philistines and the Ammonites. Question. How do you raise 40 boys? Now, I said wrong children. He had 30 boys. How do you raise 30 boys and not have a girl in the mix? Blessed? I thought you said BS. I didn't know you said blessed. I didn't catch that D at the end. How do you raise that many children when you are under and been handed over into the hand of the Philistines? How do you have that much farm ground? You don't have that many kids and not have some ground to tend to. Have some wealth somewhere. How do you maintain all that and start your family under the heavy hand of the Ammonites and the Philistines? Back it up to Ibsen. He's got 30 sons, 30 daughters. All of them weren't born in the last 13 years. Not be old enough to get married because all of them got married under his reign. They all had to be producing these children, feeding these children, raising these children under Philistine raids and occupation. How's that happen? How do you hide that many kids when the raiders come along? Quick, kids, in the cellar. Cellar 1, cellar 2, cellar 3, cellar 4, cellar 5. I mean, I've got some questions here. Something tells me that these people, I'm not going to say were mysteriously hidden from the Philistines, but somehow were overlooked by the Philistines. And it could have had something to do with money. How do you come out of a revolution rich when you're on the team that was being plundered all that time? Just questions I have that no commentators raise. Let's look at their tribes. Jephthah came from the the family group of Gilead, which was part of the tribe of Ephraim and Manasseh. And Ephraim and Manasseh, the half-tribe of Manasseh, were the tribes that stayed on the other side of Jordan. Ephraim had part of this side of Jordan and part of the other side of Jordan. And the Gileadites were the ones who were on the enemy side of Jordan. Okay, we know that. We know what tribe he was from. But when we get to Ibzan, we've got a choice to make. Let me read you that verse again, where it says in verse 8, "And Ibzan, and after him, Ibzan of Bethlehem judged Israel." There's two Bethlehems in Israel. Now, being this time of year, I'm going to let you guess where the first Bethlehem is. What tribe? Judah. Why does it have to be Judah? Because there was somebody born there who's going to be called the Lion of the Tribe of Judah. Why does it have to be Bethlehem? Because Bethlehem, it was prophesied that the Messiah would come from. O Bethlehem, who are smallest among the cities, you are most prized. So it has to be Bethlehem of Judah that Christ comes from. And when we sing Star of Bethlehem, we're not talking about Bethlehem of Zebulun. We're talking about Bethlehem of Judah. You say, well, Brother Harold, I don't understand why there's two Bethlehems. Let me ask you this. There's more than one Paris. There's more than one London. There's more than one Alma. When I'm driving down the road trying to program Go Home, and I type in Alma, Alma, Michigan, I'm not driving 12 hours. I'm driving 35 minutes. But it doesn't know which Alma I'm talking about. When we look here at Bethlehem, let's be honest. We can't say for certain which Bethlehem it was, can we? Is there anything in this text that would say it was Bethlehem of Judah? You want to know what half the scholars say? Well, we know it wasn't Bethlehem of Judah because every time we see Bethlehem of Judah, they say Bethlehem of Judah. Problem with that is, most of the times when you see Bethlehem in the scriptures, it's post-David. David was born in Bethlehem. David was the king that was promised to have someone on the throne after him. So after David, it's Bethlehem, Judah, Bethlehem, Judah, Bethlehem, Judah. Why? Because they want to say he's coming from the tribe of Judah. So everybody says, well, if it was Bethlehem, Judah, it'd say Bethlehem, Judah. I want to tell you something. They didn't know the king was coming from Bethlehem when the book of Judges was written. I grew up in Greenwood and I figured that out. So, do we know? No. But, you know who we can read and kind of get some kind of idea? We can read historians of the time and you know what they say? He's born in Bethlehem of Judah. You know what the old Jewish scholars said? The ones that lived prior to the writing of the New Testament, you know what they said? This is not gospel. This is not Bible. They could be wrong. But this is what tradition, closer to this time frame, by 2,000 years had to say. They said it was Bethlehem of Judah, and the guy that's being called Ibzan here is the guy you know as Boaz. Now let's wait for a minute. How do we know Boaz? Boaz married a widow woman named Ruth. And they had a child who had a child whose name was Jesse. They had a grandson named Jesse. And Jesse had a bunch of sons and the youngest one's name was David. And David was born where? Holy smokes, it's adding up. Why did Ruth and her husband and her sister-in-law and her brother and her mother-in-law and father-in-law, why did they all leave and go back to Moab? Because there was a famine in Israel. What was happening prior to Jephthah, just 6 years before Ibzan? The Philistines and the Ammonites had been raiding and burning all the crops and hauling everything off. And they went to Moab. What happened under Jephthah? For 6 years, Jephthah bought peace back. What did Ruth and Naomi say when they were in the land of Moab? It's now safe to go home. When did that revival take place? Under Jephthah, 6 years prior to the reign of Ibzan. You know what? Boaz fits better being Bethlehem of Judah than Bethlehem of Zebulun with no proof. Brother Harold, do you really think it was Boaz? I don't know. I'm just telling you, if you want to say that it's Bethlehem of Zebulun, you have zero evidence and zero other Bible verses to compile to make that claim. So don't make that claim. The circumstantial evidence says it's Bethlehem of Judah. When we look at Boaz and how well respected he was and how many servants he had and how much land he had and how that's how Ruth was saying, there's your kinsman redeemer. That's the guy. And he said, oh no, no, there's one closer kin to you. And Naomi was like, no. No, we don't want to marry the one that doesn't have the land, that doesn't have the power, that's the leader. We want to marry you. How many kids does this fella have? 30 sons and 30 daughters. Well, man, that'd be perfect for Ruth. She'd come in and have half a dozen herself. It all fits the narrative. And there's zero evidence for it to be in Zebulun. So, what do I think? I think it's Bethlehem of Judah. Well, why didn't they write Bethlehem of Judah? Because Judah... And the distinguishing fact that it was at Bethlehem was not necessary until 2 Samuel, when David becomes king. A few books on down the line. After that, Bethlehem, Judah, Bethlehem, Judah, Bethlehem, Judah. Makes sense to you? What do we know about Elon? Where was he from? He was from the tribe of Zebulun, which is one of the northernmost kingdoms. All of the other kingdoms have been further to the south, near the Dead Sea. Zebulun is further up in the northeast corner near the Sea of Galilee. Okay, that's pretty cut and dried. What do we know about Abdon? We know what town Abdon was from, and we know what tribe that town was in. We don't know exactly where, let me try to pronounce it again, Pirathon is. But it seems to be about 5 or 6 miles outside of Shechem in Ephraim. So if you find Shechem in the tribe of Ephraim, there's a couple of Shechems too, by the way. If you find Shechem in the tribe of Ephraim, you're going to know that Abdon grew up somewhere around there and ruled from there. Let's talk about battles. Jephthah, how many battles did he fight? Jephthah, the very first guy. We studied him last week. Two. The first battle was against the Ammonites. The second battle was a civil war against his brethren, the Ephraimites. Remember, Ephraim said, we're going to burn your house down because you didn't invite us. No, we're going to burn your house down because we want to take your land. You remember them calling him and saying in chapter 12 that they were fugitives of Ephraim? That was in verse 4. The men of Ephraim said, you're fugitives of Ephraim and Manasseh. You're not entitled to this land. You've vacated your right to the land. And so you don't send over 42,000 people to burn one guy's house down. You don't do that because you got your feelings hurt. You do that because you're planning on taking over their land. Jephthah was a mighty man in that he was known as a man of battle before he routed the Ammonites. And then he routed the Ephraimites, and you think, man, this guy ought to be on the throne for 50 years. He's dead 5 years later. He reigned 6 years. How many battles was Ibsen in? Ibsen doesn't say anything about his battles. Elon, Abdon, we don't know that they had any battles. Now listen, that doesn't mean they're cowards. We fought with the Iraqis before I joined the military. I joined the National Guard. I had 6 years in the National Guard, 2 years I could be called up. Nobody wanted to mess with America when I was in. I got my honorable discharge, could no longer be called back up for service. 2 weeks later, 9/11 happened. And everybody that got out after me got called back up and went back to war. And people said, how in the world did you keep from having to go overseas? I'm like, nobody fought America when I was in a uniform. They didn't want it. We had 6 years, 8 years of peace. So I kind of say it braggingly like they're scared of me. But having 8 years or 10 years or 25 years of peace is not a bad thing. Nobody wants to fight you because maybe you're powerful. Maybe you're influential. Maybe you're beneficial. Maybe you've made some kind of a union or pact or treaty with everyone around you. That's not a bad thing. I would rather have a military and never need it than spend my entire life fighting battles. We shouldn't beat these guys up because there's no battles listed. We shouldn't assume that they didn't have any battles. All we should note is no battles are noted. Okay? There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that at all. Let's talk about their children. Jephthah had how many kids? How many grandsons? Granddaughters? It doesn't say. He had none because he only had one daughter, and he made a stupid vow that she would be used as a servant of the Lord, and therefore she lived as a virgin all the days of her life. And it became the custom of Israel every year at that time that they went there in Gilead and mourned the virginity of Jephthah's daughter. Jephthah had no offspring. When he died and his daughter died, that was the end of his lineage. I wonder how many great-grandsons, great-great-grandsons, Ibsen had. Starting out with 60 kids. 30 sons, 30 daughters. Elon, how many? We don't know. We don't know that he had any. We can't make any determination about Elon, except that he's from Zebulun, and that is it. And we know where he was buried. That's it. We know how long he judged, and that's it. Abdon, how many sons? 40. How many daughters? How many grandsons? 30. Remember, the Hebrew word there just means son of son. So and at the time the King James was translated, every son of a son was called a nephew. Okay? Contrast the prosperity of these three judges in that 25-year span. How many children they had, what they rode on, who all they married, how they were working together to marry outside of their own tribes in order to strengthen their bonds with other nations and tribes and countries. Look at the prosperity that occurred here. Just upon the children alone, the absence of a notable battle, and the absence of any early trial in life. Would you agree with me that Ibsen, Elon, and Abdon all served in a time of relative prosperity as compared to the time before them and the time after them? Notice on your timeline what happens immediately after the death of Abdon. 40 years of Philistine occupation. 40 years. Now that's a severe punishment. 18 years prior to Jephthah. But after these 25 years of prosperity, they go into 40 years of oppression. Okay? Any questions about your timeline thus far? Everybody see the differences between Jephthah and these next three guys? Everybody see how prosperous they were? And I'm going to ask you for participation. In light of what you've been taught and what you've read in Scripture just now, what are some positives that occurred during these 25 years? There was peace in the land. Anybody else see anything that occurred during this time? That's right, John. God's not punishing them for anything wrong. Every other time it says, and the children of Israel did evil in the eyes of the Lord and served other gods, and God handed them over to the Philistines, handed them over to the Ammonites, handed them over to the Amalekites. For 25 years he's not handing them over, so that implies that these men were keeping everyone spiritually in line. Any other positive take out of this? I wonder what the Israeli stock market was doing during these 25 years of peace. Huh? Prosperous. Obviously, people were confident having more children. I wonder what the outside world thought of Israel at this time. And to help you think through that, I want you to notice who Ibsen's son-in-laws and daughter-in-laws were. You remember he married them to those outside his family. Let's read it. Verse 9, and he had 30 sons and 30 daughters, whom he sent abroad and took 30 daughters from abroad for his sons. Not 30 broads, 30 from abroad. So he didn't let his daughters marry their high school sweetheart. He didn't let them marry anybody in town. He sent them off, arranged their marriage abroad. Now, here's where your good old commentaries come in. There's absolutely no way that he let them marry anybody outside of Israel. Okay? Did you see that in the text? The next commentary says there's absolutely no way that they only married people in Israel. Did you see that in the text? You can't just inject stuff in there that you think ought to be there that's not. What does abroad mean, Brother Harold? Exactly what it says. They could have married people in other tribes. They could have married people within their tribe but other families. And that, yes, they could have married Ammonites. They could have married Philistines. Do you really think that an Israelite would marry a Philistine? Flip over one page and read Samson. Yeah. Boaz, which some people believe to be Ibzan, he married a Moabite. The Bible calls him a righteous man. So quit trying to make people be what the Bible doesn't say they are. The positives during this, it appears to be that Israel is in a time of peace, as you said. Israel's in a time of prosperity. Israel is making waves in networking with other countries. Here's another thing you don't hear about. Sometimes you see two judges at different times, or two judges overlapping. Because there's peace down here in Judah, but there's turmoil at Zebulun. Sometimes there's peace in Zebulun and turmoil in Judah because the neighboring tribes are coming in. But if this intermarriage is taking place, we're starting to see for the first time some unity within the tribes of Israel because they're intermarrying. You notice that? What does that tell us? That tells us that Israel is moving to a time when they're no longer going to be 12 individual states, but they're going to be one nation. Why does that need to happen, Brother Harold? Because Samuel's the last judge and the only one that ain't mentioned in the book of Judges. Samuel's going to come along and judge all of Israel. He's going to ride a circuit, looping the entire country, judging Israel. All of this is setting the stage for that to happen. This is not all bad. Anybody see anything else that could occur? Positives during this 25 years? We've got a tighter Israel. We've got peace with our enemies. God is setting the stage for the king to come. I mean, if Ibzan really is Boaz and the time frame is right, we're two generations from the birth of David. Jesse could be born at the end of Abdon's reign. And it would all make sense. A lot of positives here. Shouldn't beat up these guys. Shouldn't call them minor. They're not minor. Your name ain't in the Bible, and I think that's pretty major to have your name in the Bible, right? Negatives. The title of our lesson is Imperfect Leaders at the Perfect Time. Were these three men perfect leaders? You want to say no, but the question is, can you prove it? Huh? Well, nobody's perfect, no. But can we look in the text and see that something went wrong? They married more than one wife. You're absolutely right. God had permitted polygamy in the Old Testament, but God never endorsed polygamy in the Old Testament. Every time a family had more than one wife, there was always trouble. Go back and look at Jacob and Rachel and Leah. Look at their offspring. By the way, these 12 tribes are their offspring. And they're attacking each other. Go back and look at David's kids. He had one son raping his own sister, another daughter from another wife. He had one son killing another son. He had one son trying to kill him. You know, if you're not trying to outdo the Duggars, that kind of stuff don't happen. That's not Bible, that's just hillbilly logic. A negative is they're obviously having more than one wife, and they're obviously having way too many children. They're way too prosperous. Any other negatives? The same happened in chapter 10 under Jair. As soon as they died, I just read it again today. Look at chapter 10, verse 6. Under Jair, everything's great. God's blessing them. Chapter 10, verse 6. Jair dies in verse 5. And the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord and served Balaam, Asheroth, the gods plural of Syria, the gods plural of Zidon, the gods plural of Moab, and the gods of the children of Ammon, and the gods plural again of the Philistines, and forsook the Lord and served him not. As soon as God's man died, they picked seven different sets of gods to serve. It's almost like somebody said, gods, get your gods here. Come get your gods here. We got all your gods here. And they were like, oh yeah, I'll have one of the Philistines. I'll have one of the Ammonites, and I'll have the Asheroth. It was like they just went crazy. Here's what jumps out at me. And you're right, Rendell. There's some kind of decline. But I want you to think about what the decline is. All of this takes place in 25 years. Abdon is probably the same age as Ibzan. Because there's only 10 years in between them. And it says that Abdon had 30 grandsons. So this is not like generations of time. All three of these men could have graduated high school together. For all we know. It's plausible. Make sense? Okay then, if that makes sense, here's the negative. You were a prosperous, chosen man of God. Your name's Ibzan. You had 60 children, and none of them carried the faith after their generation. Elon did nothing that carried into the second generation. Nobody after chapter 12 says, and Elon's grandson rose up to reign over Israel. They had all the wealth. They had all the prosperity. They had everything. And look at Abdon. 70. 40 sons and 30 grandsons. And they rode on 40 ass colts. Those are fast donkeys, not old nags. Sports cars in early Israel. That's what a donkey was back then. By the time of Christ, it was a white horse. But back then, in the time of the judges, a young donkey was the Cadillac. 70 of these. Couldn't one of the 70 after Abdon say, hey, let's go back to God and stay with Him. Look at the donkeys we've had. Look at the prosperities we've had. Look at the last 25 years after Jephthah that God has blessed us. 70. Nope. Not one of 70. You know, some of your kids may grow up to be a disappointment, but you probably only have 6 or 7 or 8 at the most. Some of your kids may grow up to be somebody wise, famous, or rich. But what are the odds that one of them grows up to be a shining star if you have 70? One of them's going to be a lawyer. One of them's going to be a doctor. One of them's going to invent peanut butter or something important. If you've got 70. And you've got money. Not if you got 70 and you're poor and you can't get them an education. But if you got 70 and you can put them all in a Cadillac and you can send them off to the finest schools and you can provide all the stuff they need and they can grow up lacking nothing, there ought to be a great, great percentage that one of these 70 say, let's do what Granddad did. The reason that these are imperfect leaders is that God gave them all the prosperity of Israel, and they couldn't pass it on to their kids. You know what I think? It's not in the text, but it's in between the lines. I think these men raised spoiled brats. When Ibzan died, he had 30 sons who were married to influential women around the country. He had 30 daughters who were married to influential men around the country. These are the Clintons. These are the Gores. These are the Bushes. These are people who have married. These are the Roosevelts, the Kennedys. These are politically situated people, and nobody can lead Israel for God. What a failure. Lived your whole life, have all your prosperity, and all you have to show for it is you were the top man in Israel for 7 years. 60 of your children fell through the cracks and amounted to nothing. 10 years. Of Elon, and nothing's to be written about you. Nobody fell off into heresy. Nobody invaded us. Nobody ruined us. And nobody took my place when I was gone. And Abdon. Abdon is probably the most guilty of all because he had most of his life under peace and prosperity. 6 years of Jephthah, 7 years of Ibzan. 10 years of Elon. There were 23 years of prosperity when Abdon came to power. He had 40 sons. He had 30 grandsons. He had them all outfitted with the nicest vehicles of the day. And when he died, all of Israel went in the toilet. For 40 years in the toilet. Do you want to know what the last generation of Christians in America did? Let me repose my question while you think about what I just said. Do you want to know what the last generation of Christians in America did? They did not raise up a generation to take their place. Brother Harold, can you prove that? I sure can, and I'm glad you asked. They entertained their kids instead of teaching their kids. They handed them over to a new position in the church called the youth leader. They created a new thing within the church called children's church. They kept their kids entertained and occupied, and they invited other kids because instead of teaching the Bible and learning Scripture, we learned to play games. And when Grandma and Grandpa died, nobody else in the family went back to church. And you know what everybody says? I don't know what's wrong with kids these days. I do. Not because I'm an expert in parenting, but because I've read the Bible enough to know. I've read the Bible enough to know. When you see prosperity, 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 40 years of Philistine occupation. When God blesses you, aren't children called a blessing from the Lord, and blessed is the man that has a quiver full of them? Isn't that still in the Bible? Have we taken that out yet? I'm not advocating Duggarism, that you go out and have 20 kids and your wife walking around crippled by the time she's 40. I'm not advocating that. But here's what I am saying. If God blesses you with a child, it is a blessing. Abdon was blessed with 40 sons, and I don't know how many daughters. He was blessed in his lifetime with 30 grandsons, and I don't know how many granddaughters. And he was so greatly blessed of God, yet he failed to prepare his children to carry the spiritual torch after his death. How do you know he failed to do that? I read chapter 13, verse 1. And the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hands of the Philistines 40 years. Imperfect leaders at the perfect time. And that's the way it is in America today. In American churches today, we have done exactly what's happened here, and we're reaping the benefits. And here's what we've done. We've blamed college. Well, college ruined my kids. I sent them off to college, and so they started learning evolution, and they quit going to church. They didn't have a footing to stand on. They went off to college and got knocked off their horse because all they've ever done has been on pony rides their whole life.